Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. This is a three-hour talk show every Monday through Friday. We are live. I'm in Southern California, and the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, again, a heavy first hour, and I know it makes a lot of you uncomfortable, but we do need to be comfortable in our discomfort. My thanks to Lavelle Moten last hour. Coming up momentarily, we'll talk some hockey. Pierre McGuire, NBC hockey analyst, is next up. Kevin Byard coming up in hour number three. And I do have a podcast that I'm going to push out after the program. It's not live yet, but it will be with Jimmy Connors and his son Brett. That's coming up later on. But we start hour number two. As promised, we're joined by an NBC hockey analyst. He was a scout and an assistant coach with the Penguins and part of the organization's back-to-back Stanley Cups. He also spent time with the Whalers and the Senators organization. He is a Sports Emmy Award winner, and he was named as a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame Selection Committee in 2018. I consider him a good friend of the program. He is Pierre McGuire. Pierre, it is so good to have you. Now, usually, Pierre, when you and I speak throughout the spring, we have a number of things to talk about, but it's been exactly 1 year to the date since you and I last spoke. So before we get into hockey and the return of the NHL, Pierre, how are you and everybody around you right now?
Thanks very much for asking, Jim, and it's really nice to be back on your program. It's great to be talking with you. I'm doing great health-wise. My wife, my children are doing great. I had a brother that had corona. He battled through it for 14 days. He made it through. I had a sister that had it. She battled through and she's doing great. So my 83-year-old mother's up in Montreal hanging out in her apartment, and she's battling through it. Montreal's become a hot spot. So we've been touched by the corona, no question, but most of my family's doing very, very well right now. So I appreciate you asking.
And I'm really glad to hear that, and thanks for sharing that. Pierre McGuire, my guest. Now, Pierre, you are generally the ultimate road warrior during the NHL postseason, and I love to catch up with you where you've been and what you've been doing to stay on top of everything. So what's it been like for you not to be able to travel nearly as much or have any hockey to cover?
This has been the most bizarre time in my career. You know, when I started playing college hockey in 1979, I've always been at the rink ever since then, and a lot. And, you know, I went to being a pro player to being an assistant coach in college, and then obviously turning pro as a coach and as an evaluator and a management person, and then getting into the media business. So I've never had this kind of time off in terms of not being in a rink and evaluating pro players or college players. And Jim, I got to tell you, it's strange not getting on an airplane every day. It really is for me. And I fly over 200,000 miles a year, and it's really strange not to be on an airplane.
Man, really strange. Pierre McGuire joining us. That's a huge number, 200,000 miles a year. Now, at the end of last month, the NHL did unveil its return to play plan. While there were no dates attached to it, the plan does call for the league to go straight into a 2014 playoff. Pierre, what's your overall impression of that plan? What do you think?
I think the league is so blessed to have problem solvers like Commissioner Bettman and Bill Daly. I know it's fashionable to boo Gary Bettman whenever he's handing out the Stanley Cup, but I got to tell you, he cares about the fans, he cares about the league, and he really cares about the players in the league. He's on record saying there won't be any hockey if it's a jeopardy to the players' health and well-being, and the same for the fans. Obviously, if we do start, there won't be any fans in the building, but I got to believe it'll be a really desirable opportunity for people to really just kind of disconnect from what's going on in society and just watch hockey if we can get it back on the rails. So the ultimate problem solvers are in our management office at the league office in New York. I think they've done a great job. I really like the premise. There's no perfect solution, Jim. It's not easy, but I think they've really done a good job trying to balance it and make it fair for those teams that would compete. 24 would be in, obviously 7 wouldn't be in, and those 7, they can focus in and concentrate on getting the draft board ready for themselves.
Pierre McGuire is my guest. Pierre, what's your sense as to how the players feel about this plan?
Some are really excited about it, Jim. Some aren't as excited, and some of them that might have pre-existing health conditions are concerned. So I think it runs the gamut, Jim. It's not one size fits all, and that's one of the things. A player like Anton Strahlman has been an amazing battler in this league and a real gentleman. If you've ever had the chance to talk to Anthony, he plays for the Florida Panthers right now, but he's over in Sweden, and he's worried that, you know, he's got a pre-existing condition. He's not sure what this does for him. I know Max Domi is a really important part of the Montreal Canadiens. He's got diabetes. What does this do for him? Kaapo Kakko, who was the second overall pick in last summer's draft, Jim, by the New York Rangers, he's got Crohn's and colitis and other pre-existing conditions? What does that do for him? So there are a lot of questions that need to be asked. But I think if you were to ask a hockey player, what would you rather do, be sitting around or playing hockey? Most of them would say they'd rather be playing hockey.
We are talking to Pierre McGuire. You know, just to finish that thought, Pierre, like one of the issues that has to be addressed is the fact that you've got players who are in Canada at the moment, and then more than 15% of the league's players aren't originally from North America. So what kind of steps will need to be taken as it relates to the quarantine for those players?
Really great question. And I can just tell you from personal experience, I'm a dual citizen, I'm Canadian and American. I can't cross into Canada because I'm not an essential worker. And because I drive an American plated car, my mother is living in an apartment in Montreal. She's Canadian. I can't get across the border to see her. And if I do get across the border, I've got to self quarantine for 14 days. So it's tough. It's not going to be easy. And I think Canada's standing firm on that. So anybody that would come back, and remember, there's seven teams in Canada. Six of the seven are eligible to be in this 24 team tournament that Commissioner Bettman has proposed with the players. So. There's a lot of moving parts here, Jim. It's not going to be easy. That's one of the really important things to talk about is this self-quarantining mechanism that's not established by the National Hockey League. It's being established by the government of Canada.
Pierre McGuire is joining us. Absolutely. So, Pierre, in terms of the 2014 playoff, I mean, how does that impact the teams that have had the best regular season performances?
It's going to be interesting, and that's a question I don't think too many people can answer. The one thing I would say is the teams that have a lot of veteran experience, and I'll use St. Louis, last year's champions, and the Boston Bruins, last year's finalists. I think both those teams, because of what happened last year, and they did go to a Game 7, and both of them have had really good seasons this year before we got to the pause in our season, I think they're battle-tested and ready mentally and physically. They know what it takes. I think a team like Tampa, who I've been bullish on for so many years, and obviously they spit the bit last year by getting swept by an 8 seed in Columbus, even though they've had a good year, especially the second half of the year until we had the pause, I'm wondering about where their confidence level is, Jim. So there are different kind of formulas for different teams around the league. But I would say the battle-tested veteran-type teams, and Washington's another one of them because 2 years ago they won the Cup, I wouldn't be as concerned for those teams. The ones that I would be concerned are the ones that don't have as much confidence.
We're talking hockey with Pierre McGuire, and it feels great. Now, Pierre, there have not been games for more than 2.5 months. Do you think that some players might have already shifted into summer mode? Is there a risk that some teams are going to get guys back who are not in great shape?
100%, Jim, and I'm so glad you asked it that way because I was talking to some player agents over the last few days, and that's one of their concerns about their client base. And they're telling their clients, okay, now you've got to get going here because summer mode has definitely kicked in for a lot of guys. When you're not playing hockey, usually you're a hockey player, you're either training, you're golfing, or you're fishing. And it's probably not in that order, Jim.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of the things. These guys have basically been in summer mode for a while now, and they're going to have to, especially I think some of the middle-aged players. I'm not so concerned about the older guys because they know father time starting to kick in. It's the middle-aged players. The younger guys know they got to be in shape, and most of them are in good shape. It's the middle-aged guys that have had the long-term deals that have put a substantial amount of money in the bank. Those are the ones I'm a little bit more concerned about, Jim.
We are talking to Pierre McGuire for a few more moments. Like, Pierre, when you look at the calendar, is there a point of no return in that calendar where the season would have to resume in order to make sure that it happens? Like, how far can they push it out without impacting a complete 82-game season for next year?
I think no matter what, the league would like to get started on the 2021 season no later than December. So it depends on how long you think it would take us to get this tournament done and when training camps could actually start. Jim, I think it's going to take 3 to 3.5 weeks to get players up to speed so that they can play in the kind of tournament that's been proposed by Commissioner Bettman. If they're able to do that, and let's say we could start at the beginning of August, probably done by the end of September, beginning of October, that gives the players probably a month to a month and a bit to get ready for the next season. I think if they start, by the middle of December or early December, then I think we could probably get it done. But I don't think if the players aren't in training camp by August 1st, I would have a real hard time believing that they could get this done and have an 82-game schedule next year.
Once again, Pierre McGuire joining us. Now, you've been a part of two Stanley Cup winning teams. You can speak to this with authority. Does not continuing the regular season cheapen the Stanley Cup at all? In other words, would it be any less of an accomplishment to win it this year compared to other years?
No, because we've had teams like New Jersey that have won with season shortened because of labor problems in the league. So No, and that nobody diminished their accomplishments. We had 95-96 was another one where we had a shorter season. So, no, I don't see that being an issue at all. In fact, I think the players will respect one another so much in the battle that would go into it because this would be a unique situation, especially with no fans in the building, Jim. I don't think that would cheapen it at all. But I'm glad you asked the question because there are a lot of people that are speculating on that. But I've talked to enough players and coaches. I don't see anybody that actually makes their living in the league that would say that.
You know, I'm glad, Pierre, you brought the fans because, like, what would it be like to play these games without fans? How much would that impact the games?
Nobody knows, but I think it's probably going to have a bit of an impact, especially, let's just say, when there's a robust hit in a game and there's no reaction at all, or let's say when there's a tremendous save made on a breakaway or a three-on-one and there's no reaction. Usually those great saves can percolate a bench because of the crowd noise. Either there's the big depression or the big, you know, scream. So nobody really knows. I think this is where internal leadership will matter a lot. This is where if you have a tight team and guys really are comfortable with one another, I think they'll help one another along. If you got a team that's a bit frayed or maybe they're just not that full of chemistry, that could be a problem in this kind of an environment. So, again, I think it's going to be interesting to watch. But I think the teams that have really solid leadership, I'm talking about player to player, those teams probably won't have as difficult a time battling through this.
You know, probably, Pierre, I should have asked you this a few moments ago, but when you see that plan, in your mind, is it a matter of when the league returns, or is there still an if the league returns?
To me, it's still a question of if, and only because, and I, again, it's a fair question, I think a plan always has a starting point, so an actual hard date, and a finishing point, an actual hard date, and the venues that you need to participate in. That's why we have a schedule. A schedule is not tentative when it comes out in the NHL. It's a plan. It's a hard, core, in-your-face, write-it-down-in-pen plan. We have a really good roadmap, Jim. We've got a really good idea, but we don't have a formal plan yet because we don't have a starting date, we don't have a finishing date, and we don't have the venues yet.
Pierre, finally, to that point, the venues, like, what's your sense as it relates to the cities themselves, where the games might be played? How might that look?
Well, we've had 10 proposed by Commissioner Bettman, and I know that he and Bill Daley have been tremendous problem solvers through this whole coronavirus situation. I think they've handled themselves fantastically well as a league and as a management group at the league, which is really, I think, tremendous for our players and for our coaches and eventually for our fans, which is exciting. But again, it's hard to say. I think there's so much that goes into it. You know, what cities have been really devastated by COVID-19, what cities can present the best hotel situation, what cities can present the best practice facility situation. If you're going to have two pods, which is what they've talked about, that's 12 teams, so you got to have a lot of practice sites. You've got to have competent hotel situations, and eventually you're going to have entertainment areas where the players can go. So I think it's still way up in the air to say, oh yeah, there are lead pipes since you get it. The one city that obviously everybody's talking about, Jim, is Las Vegas, and it makes a ton of sense. It just makes a ton of sense for one of the pods to be in Vegas.
He is an NBC hockey analyst and once again a scout and an assistant coach with the Penguins and their back-to-back Stanley Cup championships, a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame selection committee. He is a good friend of the program. He is Pierre McGuire. Pierre, I can't believe it's been a whole year, but it's so good to hear your voice and get caught up with you. Thanks for your thoughts on that, and let's hope we can do it much sooner next time.
Love visiting with you, Jim. Thanks very much. Be safe and enjoy the rest of what hopefully is going to be a short pause before we get back on the ice.
You too, Pierre. Stay safe.
Thanks, Jim.
Great to talk to you, Pierre McGuire. Good to get some hockey in here. All right, coming up next hour, Tennessee Titans safety Kevin Byard. When we come back, our phone lines are open. I do have a Smack-Off player profile, which I will get to at some point today. I've got a podcast, which is going to be pushed out after the program with Jimmy Connors and his son Brett and more. And we are in the midst of Smack-Off season. First prize, $5,000. Second prize, no money. Third prize, nothing at all. All of that is still ahead. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Starting tonight at 8 Eastern. Welcome back. 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. You can relive a night of global events. First, a clash of the Titans in Tokyo. Fedor takes on Rampage. Plus, Musasi going up against Cavallo for the welterweight world title in London. It is Bellator MMA Recharge, only on CBS Sports Network. Make note of that. All right, telephone call is coming up. I do want to talk about the New York Knicks for a minute. In the wake of the killing of George Floyd, pretty much every company, brand, sports team, and entity under the sun had put out a statement. Most of these statements were pretty bland. They didn't really say or do much at all. Some were vague declarations that racism is bad. Some mentioned George Floyd. A few even mentioned racist police brutality. But most of the statements existed for the sake of existing. So the company or the team could say that they put out a statement. So they're covered. But if you had to pick a pro sports team that would completely butcher the whole thing, which team would you pick? I mean, maybe fresh off their embarrassing moves around paying minor league players $100 less per week, you might pick the Washington Nationals. That'd be a tempting pick. Except they finally did get around to a really weird statement, but they finally got around to it. And they somehow mentioned winning the 2019 World Series and a paragraph on their commitment to youth baseball. Kind of weird, but at least there was a statement, I guess. But as weird as that was, it's not nearly as weird as what the New York Knicks did, or what the Knicks didn't do, or what the Knicks sort of did. By Monday, the team still had not released a statement. So on Monday, James Dolan sent an internal email that was obtained by ESPN. And the email included the following, quote, "We know that some of you have asked about whether your company is going to make a public statement about the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. I want you to know I realize the importance of this issue. Therefore, I want you to understand our internal position." End quote. So Dolan's aware that people have noticed that the team has not issued a statement. And he's aware that people within the organization would like to express some thoughts and release a team statement. But they're not going to get what they want from Dolan. Instead, what they received was this explanation. Quote, "This is a turbulent time in our country. The coronavirus and civil unrest have taken their toll on our way of life. We at Madison Square Garden stand by our values of respect and peaceful workplace. We always will. As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, however, we are not any more qualified than anybody else to offer our opinion on social matters." End quote. What? Wait, what? Quote, "As companies in the business of sports and entertainment, however, we are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters." End quote. All right, first of all, given how terrible your basketball team has been for so long, it's pretty generous to claim that you're in the business of, quote, sports and entertainment. Yeah, I guess, barely. Secondly, how about Dolan saying this, quote, "We are not any more qualified than anyone else to offer our opinion on social matters," end quote. Yo, dude, you're less qualified than everybody else to play music, but when did that ever stop you, Dolan?
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain in Shambhala.
Does that sound like somebody who is qualified to play or sing? Hell no, but he just keeps on doing it. So if you're unqualified for music, but you do that, why wouldn't you put out a statement even if you think you're unqualified to do that? Because the fact is, JD, no one's asking you to put out a comprehensive proposal to address police reform. Nobody's asking you to discuss new methods of police training. You wouldn't be qualified to do that. But if you see what happened to George Floyd, and your reaction is, whoa, now wait a minute, I'm not qualified to say anything about that. That's a pretty unbelievable stance to take. If you see George Floyd killed on camera, and your reaction is, saying anything about that is way above my pay grade, that is a horrible look. I mean, that's really embarrassing, even for you and your organization. Because it's pretty safe to say that anybody at all could look at that video and say, that's wrong. That's a really easy statement to make. That's something we are all qualified to address and should. If you think that you're unqualified to say that, then what exactly are you qualified for? I mean, you could even take it a step further and say that the killing of George Floyd is the latest in a list of black men and women who have been killed, and that something needs to be done. And to say that we've seen far too many videos like this, and those are the only ones that we've seen and that we know about. You could say that, JD. And less than 24 hours later, my man, JD, the straight shooter, was back at it again with a new email that was obtained by ESPN. Here's what he said 24 hours later. Quote, yesterday, I made a sincere attempt to provide my perspective on a very difficult issue, one that has no easy answers. I know how important this topic is to so many. I do not want there to be any confusion about where I as an individual or we as a company stand. So let me be clear. We vehemently condemn and reject racism against anyone, period. End quote. Well, you know the first email did not go well when the second email includes the line, let me be clear. We vehemently condemn and reject racism against anyone, period. Like, if you find yourself in a situation where you have to send a follow-up email explaining that you are, in fact, against racism, you might want to stop sending emails. If you have to say that, then you're not good at saying things. He went on to write, quote, my point yesterday was about actions and the importance of living your values. At Madison Square Garden, we have worked hard to build an environment of inclusion and mutual respect, and those are the values we try to live every day, end quote. Wait a minute. Really? Was that your point? Was that actually your point? Because yesterday your point was, as a sports and entertainment company, you were not qualified to talk about social matters. Because that was your point. That's exactly what you said. I mean, honestly, when it comes to a statement, the bar is so low. Because the vast majority of them are not meaningful statements or memorable statements. They're just statements. Most of them feel pretty empty. With a few exceptions. But with a few exceptions, I really don't notice any of these statements. You use the word shocked. You use the word appalled. You put a few other words around it. You post it on Twitter. And then you think, we're good. We addressed it. There's our statement. But when you don't say anything and instead send that weird first email, now you do have a controversy. And only James Dolan and the Knicks could create a controversy out of this. You know how hard you have to work to create a controversy here? I mean, honestly, I'm impressed. This is so Dolan and the Knicks. Only the Knicks and Dolan could have jacked this up as badly as they did. The surprise is not that they handled it that badly. The surprise would have been if they didn't handle it like that. Instead, they're right on brand. Embarrassing as they ever were. This guy does not get it and never will. And by it, I mean just about everything. We're not qualified. We're not qualified to make a statement. We're not qualified to speak on social matters. Right. And you're not qualified to play music or sing, but that doesn't stop you, does it?
I want my money back. The lead singer's terrible. Your singing voice leaves a lot to desire. You're a bad singer.
Don't quit your day job.
You're
right?
A bad singer.
I want my money back. Well, I want my money back. I made good money for
you. I just want a refund. I just want a refund.
That's all I want.
Does that sound like somebody who thinks that you're qualified to do that? Only Dolan. Only the Knicks. When we return, it might be time for a Smack-Off player profile. It might be time for that.
The Smack-Off.
I mean, after all, we are 16 days out. Smack-Off 26. Today's player profile is going to be Dan in Denver. Stay tuned. I've got Kevin Byard at the top of the third hour.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Every single line is lit. You an unusual time.
It's lit!
There are no sports. The country is facing immense challenges. We're doing a sports talk show. It's such an unusual thing. It really is. But the Smack Off is coming up. Welcome back. I've got Kevin Beyer at top of the hour. So right now I do want to talk about Smack Off 26. 16 days, 12 shows. Let me repeat that for you. 16 days, 12 shows. That is all that is left between this very moment and Smack Off number 26. Smack Off 26 is all that stands between one caller and $5,000. $5,000 to go in their pocket to go along with the coveted trap. In terms of the $5,000, let me tell you who's making that possible. Four Sharp Corners. My guy's there. That is the world's largest seller of PSA-graded sports cards. They buy and they sell the highest quality, highest-graded sports cards. You can find them at 4sharpcorners.com. 4sharpcorners.com. I'll tell you why I love those guys. It literally came down like this. They said, we're big fans of the program. We're looking forward to the Smack Off. Is there any way we can help? Is there any way we can be involved? And that's how they're involved. And that's why they're involved. I appreciate that, guys. All right, so yesterday I ran down the entire list of nearly 30 callers who all have a chance to rip that crown off of Brad in Corona's dome. As you know, 30 are not going to get on the air. But we've got a field of about 30 that's eligible. And if you've heard me do this, you know that field is not just deep. That field is strong as hell. And then you have the Calvin Asian back in the mix. You have Cal in Vegas. You have Mark in Boston. They're making their returns for the first time in 3 years. So I'm looking at this thing on paper. I know we don't play it on paper, but I'm looking at it on paper. And at least on paper, it looks like it may be as fierce a smack off as we've ever had. That ain't hype. That's real. That's truth. So let me spend another segment talking about the event and profiling another player. Today I'm going to focus in on Dan in Denver, a perennial golden ticket caller turned second time Smack Off participant last year. Dan's been calling the program for the better part of maybe the last half decade, but he made a name for himself literally by telling all of us to remember his name.
Dan in Denver, remember the name.
That's how that guy got on the radar. Dan in Denver, remember the name.
Dan in Denver, remember the name.
But 2019 was when he really started to make calls that were worth remembering. Like he would tell us to remember the name, but not give us any reason to remember the name. But then that changed. This guy's game got better and better and better. And then he did give us some reasons to remember that name, such as the time he took dead aim at the five-time champ, Shawnee, the Cablin Asian.
When they call you the idol maker, and that's true, look no further than the Cablin Asian. He parlayed this thing into his own weekly show. Sean, you host a show once a week that no one listens to. Who are you, the Woodscopes? Sean, you and I both get on CBS Airwaves a couple minutes a week. We're paid about the same, too. And I like how Sean showed up with Carbone last year wearing a Letterman jacket from 2 decades ago, beer guts spilling out the front so it doesn't zip anymore. 10 years between calls. Bro, this isn't a high school reunion. You all but rented a Ferrari for the night. People didn't even recognize you. They just whispered, that's the guy who used to be really good at calling a radio show. He doesn't look very good anymore. Sean, why don't you do us all another favor and go away for 10 years? I'll see you in the Smack Off 35, bitch.
How deep is the field? I mean, you get smacked like that. That guy came in eighth. That's how deep that field is. I mean, going after Shawnee proved that he was fearless. He didn't give a damn about a fistful of jewelry or accolades from a decade back. Just like he didn't give one damn about Keith Arnold when Keith left the show shortly after that call that I just played.
Hey, I caught the show the other day when you were openly petitioning to find Keith Arnold's replacement. I noticed you said no previous experience required. Boy, that's got to make you feel important, Keith. Keith, you went to Notre Dame and still ended up with a job that didn't require experience. What was this, an internship, a senior project? Are you getting class credits for this stint? Are you leaving for good or just headed home for the summer semester? In Rome, if Alvy's the brains of the XR4TI, Keith Arnold was the tonsil. We can all see him, but we're not really sure what he does or why he's there. And Keith, I heard you played baseball at Notre Dame in 98. well, played isn't really the right word, seeing as you had one appearance. One appearance for one inning. What'd you do throughout the ceremonial first pitch? You've seen less first and second base than Caleb in Green Bay. Were you the guy in charge of warming up the right fielder in between innings? Did you shag foul balls and return them to the snack shack? Finally, Jim, since Ritt's been getting all the A-list podcast guests for you, maybe just not Phil Arnold's chair at all. Just let Ritt use it as a footrest.
So, clearly, Dan in Denver had begun to hit his stride in 2019. And for the second time ever, he managed to keep his golden ticket all the way up until the main event. And last year in Smackoff 25, he showed up and he did this.
Jim, like the Cablin Asian hosting a show during the daylight, I'm just happy to be here. Bro, you're the whitest thing in the jungle since Bodie's rapping. And nice call, Matt and Van. Bro, your delivery was worse than a three-wheeled UPS truck. And bro, I'm glad to see Chael Perfection Sonnen finally decided to call it quits. Chael, your fight name was Perfection? I'm struggling to see what's perfect about you. Your fighting career, 17 losses. Your smack-off career, embarrassed in the last two smack-offs. Your body, hell no. Dude, Bellator actually demanded you fight with a shirt on if you fight again. Chael fighting without PEDs is like Leffen Laguna calling today without a gimmick. No shot to win. But Romy, who the hell chose the Bucks as Milwaukee's mascot? I love how their motto is Fear the Deer. What are you going to do? Jump out in front of my vehicle and then stop and stare at my headlights waiting for me to hit you? Brad and Corona, if only your smack last year hit as hard as your nipples were in that photo. Did you rub ice on those things pre-photo? Or did they perk up around the end of your call when Vic started shouting your name?
That sophomore effort was good for eighth. Again, this is how deep this competition is. That was only good enough for eighth, as good as that was. Now, normally eighth is nothing to flex, but it instantly transformed Dan from pretender to actual contender, and it got him an automatic bid into this year's event. So, is Dan the guy to beat? No, I'm not saying that. Probably not, given who he has to go up against, given how long they've been doing it. But is he a factor? Hell yes. Could he hit the board? Maybe. And is he a guy who can potentially make the most listened to show of the year and arguably the most important show of the year even better? You know he can.
Did I hear Rick say he got with Vic and NoCal's old lady? Yeah, he's a regular old Rico Suave. I'm sure you're a real freak in the sheets, Rick. What lady doesn't want to see you take rips on your oxygen mask afterwards? Now I'm done. Nooch, you brown-nosing little bitch. You won't get a golden ticket by praising the host. I've gotten two, and I'm pretty sure Jim hates me. Just like you won't win a smack-off by bashing him. I'm looking at you, Chael. But way to come different getting Rome's ink inked on your body. What's next? You going to drive across the country in your car, sleeping with a seat reclined, host the jungle clone stock, jump through a folding table, develop a speech impediment to begin your next call? Way to take points from Kyle in Green Bay. He's a great guy to model yourself after. Matt's call delivery is so awkward, I can't tell if he's making a phone call or imitating your hockey prediction. Mark in Boston, you said you were the greatest to ever relocate from Boston to Tampa. Does that mean you kiss your kids better than Brady does too? Big move for the Broncos acquiring Joe Flacco. This transaction puts Denver a quarterback away from being good again. Hey Matt, quick reminder, you're a caller to a radio show and a bad one at that. You had a 25-second call where you called someone a bitch and a penis. Hey, Matt, if you don't have anything funny to say, just don't call. That's what Laugh, Mike, Mark, and Vic do. Jimmy, that effort was so poor, the IRS tried to send it a stimulus check. I'm going to hang up and listen, Jim, so that bitch can respond via email.
So Dan right now is going off at 11-1. I see this in horse racing all the time where you've got like these monsters, the horses to beat, and you've got that one that's like middle of the pack, 11-1, and he's running out front. And you figure that that's the speed. It's going to drop back. But then all of a sudden, the horse is not coming back to the pack. And 11-1, who's running in pretty good fractions, and you got to go out and get him. You know, and sometimes those horses do finish, and they do win. They don't fall back middle of the pack. You wonder about Dan. He's got that kind of talent. He's got that kind of game. Can he hold off some of the monsters? At 11-1 right now on Stucknut, he's even ahead of guys like Matt and Van, Cal in Vegas, and Jeff from Richmond, a former champion. A year ago, nobody could imagine Dan in Denver being an 11-1 caller to win the smack-off, but he's earned it, and he's going to be somebody to watch. June 19th. He'll get his chance to shock the world. See you in 16 days, Danny.
Mom, my phone call to the Jim Rome Show was like a smuggled heroin balloon at an airport. Rectum.
Who wants to walk with Jeff from Richmond?
Way to go, Daniel. Never heard that one before. But I guess you can expect that kind of trash coming from a guy who throws surprise birthday parties for his cat.
I'm a starving tiger for the title King of Smash. I want to come flying out of the ass of Cruz's car on that parachute that deploys out of nowhere for no reason whenever they cross the finish line.
Smack Off 26, June 19th.
The single greatest day of my life.
It is for the best of the best. It's invite only. Some of the biggest players.
You horse tooth jackass.
What the hell was the point of that, badass?
Some of the dirtiest players in the game. Caleb.
Don't mess with the walrus, young man. You'll get the tough.
Maybe you should just bring your mama. And she can apologize for being such a failure as a parent.
Cal in Vegas.
Rick, you ain't gonna do nothing. As soon as you get down here, I'm putting you in a chokehold. And I'm not letting go until your face turns the same color as your bright red alcoholic nose.
Get to the end of those double rainbows.
Double
Will
rainbow.
There be two pals in Vegas with a pot of gold?
The Canadians.
Not a good call.
Jesus Christ. Can somebody please collectively get these nerds some hookers?
Mark in Hollywood.
What up, Flutz? Tough smack talking Canadians, really?
Mark, we gotta get you some hair plugs, man.
Benny.
And I'll bet you 5,000 pine cones that you'll be looking up at me again. Lump these, Maddie.
Left in Laguna.
And Benny, two words you don't want to hear from Romy after your call.
Tactical error.
Made a tactical error.
Dirty dudes in a phone call. Gimmicky bitches like us.
Jeff in Southfield.
Jim, you're literally my bestest friend.
Mike in Indy.
Jeff received the ultimate compliment any Smack Off caller could ever receive. At one point, everyone thought he was me.
Vic.
See, that's what I do. I provide content. I supply the stuff that keeps this whole operation afloat.
Rick in Buffalo.
There's a reason why Vic's unranked, and I'm the world's number one contender. Now back to the basement, Victor.
Sean, the Cablonasian.
Shawnee, the Mayonnaisian.
I pick up the phone. I call. I win. I win more than anybody because I am the best at this. Always have been. Always will be.
Five-time champ, Brad in Corona.
R.I.P. to Shawnee's radio career and his pulmonary arteries. At this point, it's a toss-up as to which one's going to go first. But personally, Jim, I'm rooting for the arteries.
$5,000.
Good God.
Not without an invite, you're not.
Jim, I do think to him that you would have threw to a barnyard animal.
Patriot, brah, citizen, brah.
Me being left on hold was the worst thing to ever happen to all of you.
Get alive, loser.
Do me a favor and forget my name.
What's my name, boo?
And the rest of you just need to clear your calendar. June 19th. Let's do this.
We're done when I say we're done.
There's so many things in that promo that make me laugh. I'm telling you, I am fired up. I could probably say legitimately that there's no less than 10 people that can win this thing. You got to beat Brad. You got to beat the BIC, who is the GOAT. But I can make an argument for 10 people having a really good look at it. This is going to be an amazing Smack Off, something to look forward to. But it's not too late to get in the field. Like, this guy's trying really hard. Let's go to Toronto. Sonny. Hey, Sonny, what's up? How are you?
Hey, Sonny. Hey, Jim. I'm great. Look, thanks for...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't amazing.
Like that call. I don't like that call.
Absolutely amazing. You know, and to think that I was actually concerned about what that guy might say. Again, two things. Be ready. If you're on hold, you never know when I'm coming out of a take or an interview and I might go to you. Be ready. That guy was not ready. How do I know he was not ready? He addressed me with his name. All right, so there's your promo. That made me laugh a lot. There are plenty of people that can win this thing. Let's go to Toronto. Hey, Sonny. What's up, Sonny? How are you? I'm good, Sonny. Roma. Let's go to Toronto. Sonny. Hey, Sonny. What's up? How are you?
Hey, Sonny. Jim. I'm great. Look, thanks for...
Not so much. Not if you don't know my name and your name. Not so much. Hey, Sonny, if that were the first time you called, then I would understand that, kind of. But it wasn't. Choo-choo, Sonny. Man, come on, man. Act like you've been here before, because you have. That is not the first time you've been on this show. I understand it's nerve-wracking. I know there are several hundred affiliates that carry this show and several zillion people listening. You got to put that out of your mind. It's just you talking to me, Sonny, talking to Sonny. Come on, Sonny. Sonny, how the hell am I going to put you in the smack off? On the big stage, in the big arena, if you can't handle a phone call on a Wednesday. If you can't get through, hello, thanks for taking my call. But you want to be in the smack off. It's kind of a hard argument for me to make, Sonny, letting you in when you don't know my name or your name.
Dan in Denver, remember the name.
Kevin Byard joins us when we come back.